At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hempresent. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hempresent, email me at hempresent@gmail.com. Jeff Cover is an American actor known for his television roles as Dodger in China Beach, Jacob Hell Jr. in Sons of Anarchy, Joe in the fourth season of The Walking Dead, and Kurt Nepo in Walker, Texas Ranger. He's also known for his movie roles in Out of Bounds, The First Power, One Tough Bastard, A Man Apart. Jeff received a Daytime Emmy Award for Outstanding Supporting Actor in a Drama Series for his role in ABC's General Hospital, as well as many other roles he's played. And Jeff now stars in Grassland, a new narrative film set in 2008 that explores the economic recession and the inequities of the era's incarceration rates. The story follows Leo, played by Robbie Cabot Conyers, an inquisitive and sensitive boy who puts his mother's illegal cannabis business, played by Mia Maestro, at risk when he befriends their new neighbors, a young white boy and his police officer grandfather, Jeff's character. Jeff's here to give us the 411 on the 420 of that 911. Hey, Jeff, how you doing, man?
Too many numbers, man. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Full disclosure, back in the day, as they say, I grew weed in my rental home for over a decade. Helps to have a cool landlord. I also, as you know, I spent a long time as a cannabis reform activist, so I'm intrigued by this story. You know, you appear to me to be a deep, thoughtful, I think I could say, spiritual person. I've been enjoying your Soul Bloom series very much. In Grassland, you play a police officer who moves in below a single mother who has a pot grow in her home. What drew you to this particular role? Why did you want to be a part of this story?
Well, a dear friend of mine, David Goldblum, shepherded the script and was the producer on the job. That was the first part, and then the second part was I had my experiences back in the day where I was at the effect of police, and at the effect of police with regard to marijuana. And these days I'm really deeply committed to finding a way for us to see each other as brothers and sisters rather than as opposite sides of any given coin. So all that together and the story being so well told and so socially conscious and conscientious, all of that just made it a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, the trailer looked really cool. And I know that there's a screening coming up soon. What did you do to prepare to portray your character? Did you do any specific research, speak with people who have lived the experience of being in law enforcement, or just draw on your own experiences?
I cut my hair.
Yes, I saw that, the police cut.
I cut it three times, man. I offered the producers on General Hospital the option of using me cutting my hair on screen, which they took. So I did that, and then I cut it, and the director said, "Nah, shorter." And I went and I cut it again. He said, "Nah, shorter." And then I came up with what we came up with. The research was, I've had experience. You know, I've been on a lot of sets and I've met a lot of police what was important for me was to find the humanness of this cat. And, his humanness was very much involved in trying to be a good parent to this, his grandson, and at least partially to make up for the fact that his daughter had died of heroin overdose. He's trying to be a nice guy and trying to be a good neighbor and trying to be a good father, and had a deep and profound hatred of drugs, and really tapping into the the what was happening back in the day, which was, you know, marijuana was a Schedule I drug. It was right there next to heroin and opium and LSD and everything else, and
which it still is, but now there's, you know, sold in stores and stuff in many states.
Right. It's federally, it still is Schedule I, isn't it? Yeah. And, you know, and I was around during that, you know, when Nixon declared the war on drugs, and all the possibilities for these drugs were just swept off the table, you know, so that the pharmaceutical companies could score, and so that Nixon could score politically. And you know what really I saw was that it's if you make something illegal that everyone you want to arrest is involved in, then you don't have to look for reasons to arrest them. And that's what I really saw play out back in those days.
And of course, you know, prohibition was used disproportionately to target people of color and economically challenged communities. It was a very kind of a convenient mechanism to use politically, even.
It really was. And you know, and where I come from, a small rural town in Montana, and in those days, you know, anyone who wasn't a redneck was seen as someone that needed arresting too. So I fit the bill there.
Right. What were the most emotionally challenging scenes for you to perform in Grassland, and how did you approach them? Were there any?
Oh, there were a couple. I make one arrest, try to make another arrest, and I get confronted by my grandson, and I slap him, and that was really challenging. Just to, you know, to own that kind of knee-jerk violence when you don't want to, but it just comes out of you. And then a scene where I talk about my, you know, the death of my daughter. Those were all very emotionally alive for me. But, you know, that's one of the reasons I do the work that I do is because I love, you know, stepping into the deep end with a partner on the other side of the table and having those sorts of experiences. So I really enjoyed doing the work.
I think that you took your life experiences and your perspective about the subject matter into this role, but did playing this role have any impact on how you view the issue of cannabis related incarceration and its effects on families looking back?
Well, it's as you mentioned, you know, people of color and people who are economically challenged are. They make up a far greater population of those who were and probably still are incarcerated for this absurdity of a crime, and it's, you know, it's just a shame, and it's what I really want to stress for myself in my own life and for anyone who, you know, comes to this movie, which I hope y'all go watch it, is that anything that we use to separate ourselves from a group and demonize that group so we don't have to look at our own darkness, because that's what it always is, is just we have to stop doing that to ourselves and to each other. You know, we really need to start treating each other as people, no matter what side of whatever equation it is that we're looking through.
Right. We have about a minute till the first break. You've spoken candidly about your past experiences using alcohol and drugs, and you know, journey to sobriety, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more on how those life experiences contributed to how you approached this project or this role?
Well, I did get to observe several policemen doing their jobs back in the day, and you know what really informs my work is just the feeling of separation and the feeling of not belonging. And, you know, and cops, God bless them, they, you know, that's their everyday reality, is they don't belong. They walk into a room and they're the cop. And you know, they're trying to be a good parent, but they're the cop parent. And that feeling of not belonging, of there being something that you have to hide, it's the same for cops as it is for criminals in that regard.
Right. We're going to take a brief break and come back with Jeff Cover. Don't go anywhere.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
All right, we're back with Jeff. Jeff, you are a seasoned actor. You've been in so many roles. How did you work with your director and fellow actors to create an authentic and emotionally powerful performance? Can you share anything with us about what's that process like for you, and how has it evolved over time?
How it's evolved over time is that for me, I really had to get, from the very beginning, I had to get in touch deeply with just what the feelings are of, you know, being alive on the planet. And that used to be a real challenge for me, because I was so shut down for, you know, for all sorts of reasons of trauma and a life experience. And over the years, I've done lots and lots of spiritual work and work of getting to know myself and the parts of myself, and allowing all the parts of myself as much as possible to come into the light of consciousness and of awareness. And so the more of me I'm willing to look at myself, the more I'm willing to let it be seen by others. So as I've gone along, you know, I'm able to bring more and more of myself into the equation. And I really want to commend our producer, David Goldblum, and the Transformational Prison Project, who came into our little cohort, and we were offered a chance to sit in a healing circle with these gentlemen and their partners. These were ex-convicts from Massachusetts who came up with a system whereby they offer each other support to take responsibility for who they are, what they've done, and to share themselves vulnerably with each other, and then, which then allowed them to, these are cats that were never supposed to get out of prison. One of them was in prison for killing a policeman, and he's now out walking around free. And this program that they came up with is now shared in all prisons within the Massachusetts prison system. And we came together, and anyone who wanted to could get involved, cast and crew alike. And we brought something that we valued personally and put it in the center of this circle of like 40 people, and then went around, and then we talked about why that was important to us. And it was all these people getting vulnerable with each other. And once we did that, I went back on set the next day, and, you know, my camera operator had just said something deeply vulnerable about themselves, and I had said something deeply vulnerable about myself, and the sound people, same, and the other actors, and we had all shared something. And, you know, acting is really like giving yourself permission to be fully alive in a situation. And when you can trust the people you're surrounded by, you can really let yourself go in that way. So that was something that I'd never had the experience of on a set. And I hope I have a lot more of those kind of experiences.
Cause I mean, in life we're playing a character, right?
Right.
And a lot of the times we're acting because we can't be honest, and we're, you know, trying to tailor our being to the expectations or the environment that we're in. Right. And so all of your inner work, I can really see how you can apply that to acting with that perspective. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the, you know, my definition of acting is the Sandy Meisner definition, which is acting is behaving truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So, yes, there are aspects of life that are coming out and others that are not coming out because of the situation of the character. But what's really driving the character, just as what's really driving us in life, is what is our intention in a given situation? What do I need passionately, emotionally from this other person or from the situation or from myself? And so we all have that walking into every situation. And when you can find what that is for the character, then you just get to, you know, wind yourself up and go.
We live in some, well, as the Chinese proverb or curse would say, very interesting times.
Yeah, we do.
It's thick right now, and it's looked like it's going to be complicated moving forward. Given the evolving attitudes and laws around cannabis today, and kind of the greater context of everything, how do you hope that audience will respond to the film Grassland and your character's portrayal?
I hope everyone just starts being a little nicer to each other. You know, and that's kind of the whole answer.
that I don't think we've ever needed something like that more than we do now. We've always needed it, but boy, is that just kind of the epitome of how we need to approach what we're going through as a nation, as a planet, and as individuals, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
We've got some heavy lifting now. We have a lot of opportunity to evolve here.
Well, I don't know if this message is in the film, though it might be, because there's hope in the film. What, you know, because the question for in so many the minds of so many people that I know right now is, what the hell can we do? And
yeah,
that is becoming clear to me is that what I can do is to not let myself be dragged down into hopelessness and despair. Yeah. To also not to ignore what's going on, but to find my way of recognizing that something is going on that's deeper, more profound, more holistic than what's going on in any given situation and with any given political bullshit that happens to be going on. And just to go like, you know, something's happening here, and I want to keep my my own intention alive in the direction of uplifting what's right with the situation rather than, you know, falling apart because of what's wrong.
Yeah, you know, I've been an activist for most of my adult life, and activists, by, you know, our essence is that we believe in hope, that there's hope that you can make things better, that you hope that you can create a change, hope that you can become, you know, a better embodiment of that you want to see. And I came up with hope standing for helping others perceive enlightenment.
Wow.
With fear, of course, the, you know, false expectations appearing real. And you know, that's really, I think, where hope springs from, is this human desire to figure it out and to, you know, have a purpose and create that, you know, what is the reason for all of this? We had this innate drive, you know, and I'm not sure there is a reason. I think that might be the gift that we're given, is that we can create the purpose of our lives with our own actions and desires and you know, heart song. Is that crazy?
No, you're absolutely right. And what my next podcast is actually called Yes And. Yes And, for me, the absolute essential for that is to really do the work to know what I am that is other than my ego self. You know, to
false
really
ego.
To begin to identify as the thing in me that is eternal and that is not just connected to everyone and everything else, but actually is everyone and everything else.
We have under a minute till the next break. Really quickly, the film is set in 2008. Did you draw on any personal memories or historical events to help ground your performance?
My ideas were based in events that took place probably more back in the 70s. Mm-hmm.
The dynamic's the same, right?
It certainly was from my perspective. And, you know, when everyone I knew was a criminal, myself included, and, you know, when I was at the effect of those laws and those people who saw me as a second class citizen.
Right.
And to be fair, I saw myself as a second class citizen as well. So I can't really put it on them.
Got it. We'll take another break and come back with our final segment for Jeff.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
All right. Final segment with Jeff Kober. Jeff, do you have any new projects coming up that you have the liberty to share with us? I've just enjoyed your acting so much.
Oh, thank you for that. You know what? I'm waiting for the next new project to find me. I'm working on a second book. The first one is called Embracing Bliss. This one is called The End of the Pain Factory, and it's my journey from darkness to light, which I've been writing. It's a memoir, God help me, that I never wanted to write, but every time I tried to write about what it is I've learned, I kind of sounded like I sounded like a dick, actually, and I just had to throw stuff away. But then I started telling my story, and you can't argue with someone's story. This is my story, and even if it isn't what other people remember, it's what I remember, and the way that I remember things, and the way the things affected me. And so I'm alternately thrilled and tortured by doing that work right now.
What was it that you look for in a project when, you know, I imagine that you have an agent or that you get things kind of sent to you or pitched to you? What makes you go, wow, this, I think I'm going to like this role. I'll take this role.
Well, I more and more really want to do things that have, you know, a human element, even if they're, you know, even if they're action films or cops and robbers, still there has to be, we have to be presenting real humans and showing the insides of ourselves to each other, because I think that's what's really needed in our world today, is just, you know, let's, come on, man, just, you're the same as me. We're the same, you know, and have the, you know, finding the humility to not set ourselves apart from each other. And as artists, as actors, as storytellers, I really see it as our job to, you know, at least move people in that direction. There's a cat, Mark Kriegel, who's a brilliant writer, who has graced me with a bit of his wisdom, and you know, I work a lot on I teach meditation, and I write about consciousness and spirituality, and he said this most beautiful thing. He said the best outcome of this book that you're writing is, he says I want to see that guy at the VFW starting on his 13th beer saying, I don't know, I think I might give this meditation stuff a try. It's like that almost brings tears to my eyes to think of, wouldn't that be something? You know, that's not the world I grew up in, but wouldn't it be nice if that's the one that I helped move us toward?
We work so hard to create all of these artificial divisions and ways to separate and divide ourselves and convince ourselves that we're not all one, you know? And it's a tragedy, frankly. It's a tragedy.
It is.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be like this. It'd be so simple to have this, you know, near utopian reality where we all appreciate and value each other and are nurturing and supportive. Everybody would be so much happier. It would be so much simpler. We don't need all these gadgets. All this stuff is just created to make us buy something, right? I mean, I just believe I'm an old hippie, you know, and I'd be much happier in a teepee with, as long as I had food and you know, people around me, community that I loved, then I don't need all this. As long as I'm warm and taken care of in my old age, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, when I was dropping out of college and trying again and dropping out again, and marijuana, cannabis, weed, that was our social glue. That was the sharing. That was the thing that we shared. And it was a lot like a sacrament. It's like, I'm going to offer
my world. It was.
Yeah, it really was.
Well, you know, yeah. And you know, right now we're sitting around the digital campfire and this is how we get the information out. Grassland is available for pre-order on Apple TV. I've seen the trailer. It looks like it's just really dynamic. Jeff Kober, it's just such a pleasure to talk to you, man. Thank you so much for being on the show. You have so much to offer. And I just, like I say, I've discovered your Soul Bloom podcast on YouTube, and I'm just super impressed by it. Good luck with all your future endeavors, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. Stay strong, folks. I'll see you next time.